You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to Sri Lanka 99.94 Cricket Every Day. My name is Mark Machado from Murrayfield, and I'm joined as always by Estelle Vasudevan from the Paparai, who joins us from Australia, where she is down there covering all of Sri Lanka's games at the World Cup. Sri Lanka 99.94 is your new home for Sri Lanka content, and we'll be dropping into your podcast feed on YouTube or the 99.4 app several times every week. So please do rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know that we are here. Also, if you get a chance, go check out the Mitch Johnson show as well. That's where the former Aussie quick talks about his life and cricket. You can find it where you listen to a podcast or on YouTube. Thanks for joining Cricket's Conversation. Estelle, have you managed to listen to any of that Mitchell Johnson show yet? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I did listen to the first episode, actually, while I was traveling to Perth, I think. Yeah, really interesting. Just to kind of see, you know, the mind behind, you know, I'm an Australian fan, so obviously I'm a Mitchell Johnson fan as well. So, like, you know, the thinking, the process, all of that, very interesting.
Yeah, I should state that you can probably tell from my accent that I'm not an Australia fan. But yeah, it's an absolutely fascinating insight into someone who was, and he's still an elite athlete. He's trying to get into boxing now and MMA and all sorts. I'm like, oh, that stuff's not for me. Anyway, let's get crack on with the show. We're talking today about I was going to call him mercurial, but he's not mercurial at all, actually, is he? He's slowly becoming Sri Lanka's steady hand, isn't he? Dhanajaya De Silva, opener, spinner, middle order batsman. He's almost, I want to say, he's a man of almost too many talents, isn't he, Estelle?
Yeah, funny. Also, I think he came into the limited overs side replacing TM Dilshan, who kind of did everything for Sri Lanka. So very similar. I think the only thing he doesn't do is keep wickets. Other than that, you see him fielding. Yeah, yet. I mean, who knows, right? If Kusal Mendis has an injury, what's going to happen? Yeah, and like, I mean, he fields anywhere. He's batted pretty much everywhere in that batting order. Can bowl in the power play, can bowl in the middle overs. Yep.
Shall we talk about his early career? Because he comes from Hambantota to down south. If you don't know your Sri Lankan geography, that's just about the most southerly point on the island, if you can imagine that. And he went to Richmond College.
Yeah, your favourite school.
My favourite school, even though I should also state I have no affiliation to it. But he was the kind of first player to come out of it in its kind of modern iteration as a school that produces a lot of top cricketers, right? What do you know much about how effective he was as a schoolboy cricketer? Because I know obviously the place for schoolboy cricket is the Paparai, right?
Yeah, actually, I should say he was initially at Debarawewa. I don't know the entire name of the school, but it's from Debarawewa, where also Suranga Lakmal also studied. And then he came to Richmond for, I think, maybe he's under 19 years, and captained Richmond. So I don't have the numbers. I think he's I'm not going to call him old, but like he's before the Paparai's time, slightly before.
Oh, okay.
So we don't have the numbers on him, but I think he was pretty prolific because he captained that Richmond side as well.
Yeah, and, as I kind of just alluded to, Richmond College is now probably one of the elite schools in terms of producing international players, not just for Sri Lanka, but if you look at their record, it's comparative to just about anywhere else in the world, any of the big South African schools or any of the big English boarding schools as well. And I'm sure at some stage, I would love to do an episode just talking about, because they kind of had a bit of a golden team, didn't they, that included Hasaranga and Asalanka and other well-known players. And I'm sure at some point we'll get around to talking about that. But it's interesting to me that he was, you know, he's kind of heralded as the first to come through. Obviously, the school itself is very old, but he breaks into kind of domestic cricket in the early part of the last decade, I think about 2012, 2013, and starts to kind of get a sniff of international, of the international jersey about 2015, and then kind of breaks into all three formats by about 2016, right? Starts off quite well, but has a very staccato kind of, I suppose, selection process, as it did actually a lot of Sri Lankan players at the time, because let's be honest, there was a lot of inconsistency around the players you were going to pick. Obviously, a whole clutch of legendary players had retired in the two or three years before that. And players were being brought in. I mean, you said he was brought in to replace Dilshan, or, you know, to take the spot of Dilshan. But there's absolutely no chance anyone's coming in as, you know, I think he would have been about 24, 25 when he made his debut, and being Dilshan from the get-go, right? So the first few years of his career, there were some real highlights, but he ended up being dropped quite a lot, right?
Yeah, he has been, I mean, in and out, particularly of the limited overs sides. I think he caught everybody's eye during his debut test series against Australia when Sri Lanka won 3-0 in Sri Lanka. And just, I mean, you know, you look at him in test cricket particularly. I don't think there is a more aesthetically like pleasing batter to watch, because when he's in touch and when he's playing those drives and those cuts and the pulls, he just looks so elegant and he seems to have so much time on his hands. But in limited overs cricket, he found it tough, I think, because, as you know, Sri Lanka have loads of opening options, right? And he comes in like on the surface to replace T.M. Dilshan, has a good, I think he had a good couple of games to start things off. And then, you know, he's in and out. I think at that point, it was Niroshan Dikwala and Danushka Gunatilaka who were kind of at the top of the order, also Kusal Pereira. So he kind of found it really hard to break through that. And eventually ended up in the middle order. And of course, I mean, I personally think it's much, much harder to bat in the middle order, particularly in T20 cricket as opposed to, test cricket. So he found it very difficult. And I don't think his style of play really, you know, kind of suits the middle order either. But yeah, he, and you look at, in ODI cricket, I think, We did a stat or kind of a graphic maybe a year ago. He's batted from 1 to 8 or 1 to 9. So that should give you an idea, like the kind of inconsistencies in the way they've played him and his role in the side.
The other thing to point out as well is that definitely from the early part of his domestic career, there wasn't really a good structure in place in Sri Lanka to bring through T20 cricketers, right? So until kind of the advent, until they sorted out the Lanka Premier League and even these invitational T20s, the system wasn't in place to really develop players into international T20 players, right? They basically needed to find a way to boil down the talent they had so that the best players were playing against the best players. And I don't think that was happening enough. So if you go back and look at some of the stats that some of the first-class players were pulling in domestic cricket back then, they don't necessarily translate to international form, mainly because they just weren't able to play a standard good enough, right? And then you were kind of, you know, the boys really didn't really stand much of a chance. I don't, when you reflect back on it and you think about it, you were really looking for a needle in a haystack. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got lots more to discuss on DDS.
You're listening to Cricket's Conversation on 99.94. Whatever your team, we have the show for you on podcast, YouTube, or on the 99.94 app. We have India, England, South Africa, West Indies, and now Sri Lanka covered. If you want to find us, the best way is to follow us on social media at 9994DM by downloading the 9994 app or Google 99.94 on podcast. We speak cricket.
So Estelle, till quite recently, we were debating whether or not he should have a role in T20 in the T20 side. It feels to me that definitely during the Asia Cup and the World Cup, or at the point of recording this, we haven't played England yet. So who knows what will happen in that last round for Sri Lanka. And obviously we need favours of other sides. But he's really come through as a T20 cricketer, right? He's becoming Sri Lanka's Mr. Dependable in the kind of top order, isn't he?
Yeah. It's a funny thing because, like you said, we were talking about, you know, does he fit into the side? Does he fit into T20 cricket overall, right? And the guy he was replacing, Charit Asalanka, was like, to me at least, the T20 batter in the Sri Lankan setup, right? But you're right, he's come through for Sri Lanka. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that in bowling friendly conditions, and we've seen that in this World Cup in particular, where it hasn't been, you know, go after the bowling right from the word go, get to 90, 100 in the first 10 overs, you know, it hasn't been that kind of tournament. If you look at most of the teams, they've looked to kind of build to that 60, 70 run mark in the first 10, then kind of kick on with wickets in hand. That seems to have been the ploy, and that's definitely Sri Lanka's plan as well. They are looking to keep wickets intact and go after the bowling in the latter half of the innings. In those kind of conditions and with a plan like that, I think he's really prospered, particularly because he does play good, like quick pace well. So that has worked in Sri Lanka's favour a lot. You know, on surfaces like the one we saw at Perth, Sri Lanka were expected to struggle with the pace that was on offer. And I mean, against an attack like the one Australia possesses, you almost felt like it was, you know, something terrible is going to happen. But somehow, you know, they were up for it. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that they've got those solid options up top. And De Silva is, of course, one of them. You know, if you tell me to pick between Asalanka and DDS for T20 cricket, like if I had to pick between them, I'd still probably pick Asalanka. But I love that kind of intent that De Silva has shown throughout this tournament. He hasn't been, at least he's been trying to, you know, not get bogged down, trying to score quickly. And we saw that in the last game, 66 or 42, that was a really good knock. When he opened the batting, when Nisanka wasn't playing, he played with a lot of freedom. So that intent is good to see. You don't want to see a batter trying to, you know, get a runner ball and, you know, just stay at the crease. You want to see them at least try to score a little quickly. And that's what we've seen from him.
What's really impressed me is that this time last year at the World Cup, he was the vice captain. He was at the side, and he's worked at it. He's stuck at it. He's been a mainstay in domestic cricket in Sri Lanka now. In T20 cricket, he's rebuilt his reputation as a batsman in that and a bowler. We'll talk about his off spin in a minute. And I think he's really responded to, I assume, the feedback he gets from the management and in and around the Sri Lanka setup, and he's got himself back into the side. And yeah, you know, as I said, I think he's become Sri Lanka's Mr. Dependable. He's a good looking man. He plays good looking shots as well. So he's got a lot going for him at the moment. He's 31 years old, so he's kind of coming into his prime as a T20 player, right? The next kind of 5 years are his moment. And I think he's given a lot of people in SLC a bit of a headache, because I don't think they planned for him to be this good at this point, right? But he's, as I say, I think he's just becoming undroppable, isn't it? And you know, when he was called upon in the Asia Cup when Asalanka lost form, he came in and he did a job instantly, right? So I mean, I love him. He's brilliant. And the other thing I will say, right, is when he was at the side, I didn't see, and maybe he was doing this privately, and he's obviously entitled to do it privately, but I didn't see any public displays of unhappiness about not being part of it. It appeared to me that it was get the head down, keep working, keep, you know, go back to the basics, keep doing what you're doing, and eventually you'll get back into the side, which is exactly what he did. And yeah. Now I'd say he's become one of our senior players, right?
Yeah, and like, I don't know him personally, but just seeing him around some of the younger players, he seems to be a kind of guy who a lot of them go to. Like, I mean, I noticed this during the LPL as well, when Lahiru Kumara didn't have such a great game. He was almost in tears, and De Silva was on the opposition. But Kumara went to him, you know, and, you know, that's not something you see in men's sport, particularly in South Asian yeah. teams, where you have guys like that who are supporting their teammates, their, you know, younger teammates. So I think he is a bit of a kind of, he plays that kind of big brother role for the team. And like you said, right, you never see any outbursts on social media or whatever. And you know what, he's entitled to feel hard done by, particularly like looking at the way he's been used in limited overs cricket. Like I said, you can see he's batted through like 1-9 or 1-8 in ODI cricket. So it's tough for a player like that, you know, when you're being used in such a range of roles, to kind of get into your own and start performing regularly. But I haven't at any point heard any like complaints or, you know, seen that kind of reaction from him. But he does seem like the kind of guy who will just work hard and try to get his kind of his performances through the talking. And you can just imagine, right? Like, you're vice captain and you're benched for a World Cup. It couldn't have been easy.
The one thing I would say though, right, is that vice captaincy, it's a bit a moot thing, because it doesn't really mean anything, does it?
Well, also the Sri Lankan vice captaincy is completely cursed. Asalanka was vice captain in the Asia Cup. Look what happened.
Yeah. So, but I wonder if it's kind of doesn't mean anything. It adds pressure onto you. Sorry, it's talking about it is cursing my chest and making me cough. It adds pressure to you, all it means is that whenever there's some sort of ceremony, you've got to be at the front there, right? When actually you just want to get in and out as quickly as possible. Maybe that's just me, and maybe players love it. I don't know. And it's just an added burden, isn't it? You don't want to be vice captain. You want to be captain or not. Nothing in between. But I do wonder if. You know, anything happened to Dustin Sharnaker, if he got injured or anything, whether it ended up at this point being DDS who took the captaincy, at least for a short while. Can we talk about his bowling now? In fact, let's take a break and then come back and talk about his bowling.
If you love the language of cricket and want more, then head over to the 99.94 app and you can hear all of our podcasts and cricket commentary. We're adding new shows all the time and covering cricket series from all over the world. Be the first to hear all of our announcements by following us on social media at 99.94DM. Welcome to Cricket's Conversation.
So, Estelle, it appears to me I have, almost after every Sri Lanka game at this World Cup, somebody goes, why didn't they bowl out DDS? He's opened the bowling. He's bowled in the death at some point, I seem to remember. He's bowled in the middle. He's bowled everywhere. But we rarely get to see him bowl all four overs, right? Do you have any idea why that is?
I just think Sharnaker doesn't want to like tempt fate by bowling him that extra over and having it go for like 20 runs. But you're right. And someone tweeted this at us this morning as well about...
Yeah.
You know, why Dhananjay De Silva doesn't bowl out his overs. And it's funny, I was just looking at his numbers. 32 games and he's bowled only 19 of them in T20 cricket. Which is weird because, like, I mean, we've spoken about this many, many times before. He's not, you can't really class him a part-time bowler, right? He's a little bit above that. So it's interesting that, you know, almost half, 50% of his games, he hasn't bowled. And in this tournament, I think Sharnaker has actually used him well, in that he's used him in phases where he doesn't expect the opposition to really go after the bowling. And he's picked up some really important wickets. I think he picked up Paul Sterling in the game against Ireland at a really critical stage when he was just getting going. He's bowled, like you said, he's bowled the first over. He's bowled in that like 15th, 16th over type of time as well. I just think the reason why they are not bowling him four overs is, number one, Sri Lanka do generally go in with the four, you know, proper bowlers, and you know, one or two.
We start with four. We might not finish with four though. Let's not get carried away, Estelle.
Yeah, I don't want to jinx it by saying that. Yeah, so maybe, you know, Shanak is just trying to utilize his best bowlers in those crunch situations. So personally, I think he's used him well at most times, but you're right, he is definitely underbowled. I don't know whether he should be bowling four overs every game, but he should be bowling in every game, definitely.
Because there's economy as well in T20i. Yeah. It's like seven and over.
Yeah.
You're like, which is brilliant. That's crazy. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you've come to this podcast looking for answers on why he's not bowled out, I don't think we have any. The only thing I can say is I wonder if they literally just go into it and the day and they've got people who crunch the data there and go, we cannot bowl 12 overs of spin on this pitch, or we can't bowl 12 overs of spin against this opposition. Maybe
I also think
10
at they're
the
kind
most.
Of looking at matchups. So they're looking at the left-handers who aren't, you know, I mean, and there are so many things, right? The short boundaries, like at Brisbane, there was a really, really short, like one of the straight boundaries was really short. So, I mean, you have to think about all those little things also when you're bowling him. And I just, you feel like, you know, when you bowl that part-time or the non-full-time bowler, when you bowl him, that one extra over and it goes for like 20 runs, you're going to get criticism again, right? Like, you know, you've got four guys who can bowl four overs. Why are you bowling this guy four overs? Whatever. So I think it's a little bit of that as well.
Yeah. Before we kind of wrap this up, I just want to talk about DDS and other formats, right? Because actually he really is generally a world-class test cricketer. Looking at the data before we came on, I realised he's played 45 test matches, which actually for a Sri Lankan player is quite a lot, because we don't play that many test matches anymore, sadly. And in ODI cricket, ODI really, when you think about his skill set, that should be where he comes into his own the most. And actually, I think the next few years, depending on how much ODI cricket Sri Lanka get to play, that might well be the case, because, I mean, his as we say, a bit more than part-time bowling will be useful in that. And he bats more at a good pace for an ODI batsman, right? The two games that I will always remember him for are that test in Durban, where he was the one who kept Kusil Perera company for the longest. At the crease when KJP made his 153, was it? And also the 2019 World Cup win over England. And I laugh because I love, like, the thing I'm probably most proudest about Sri Lankan cricket at this moment in time is our record against England at 50 over tournaments. And no one expected Sri Lanka to win that game. And they somehow managed to do it. And DDS was fantastic. Did he get three wickets that day, I think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So, DDS, he's just a brilliant cricketer, isn't he? I love the man.
Yeah, I think everybody loves him, right? What's not to like about DDS? He's got, you know, he seems like a really easygoing guy. He's got, you know, the cute family. He seems really good with fans, you know, and if that's not enough, he's so... People talk about Babar Azam, and, you know, I can only think of one player who potentially has a better cover drive, and that's Laura Woolworth. DDS in full flow is the most aesthetically pleasing batter to watch, right? Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and... I really hope, you know, I suppose a lot of these episodes where we talk about players ends up being a kind of love letter from us to them, right?
Yeah.
I really hope that in the next, 31 is not old, obviously, but in cricket terms, it means he's coming to his prime, but he's not got a huge amount of cricket years left. Five, 6 years, maybe 7 or 8 if he really looks after himself and is lucky enough to avoid injury. And I really hope, though, that he gets a chance to go and play lots of franchise cricket around the world and, spread the gospel of Dadajaya De Silva and let people around the world know about that cover drive, and he goes and enjoys it and makes loads of money and takes his cute family along with him everywhere. And I wish him all the luck for it.
Are we going to end it with Jason Holder's Dhananjaya?
if we can get that clip in, I don't know. Should I do that? I'll do that outro. Hold on. Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka at 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please rate, review and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast and tell all your friends and family about us. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazudev1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Serasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.